There we go. Again, my name is Glenn Harris. I'm the chair of the MCA Transportation Committee. Welcome to the September 12th meeting of the committee. We've got some guests here from Fairfax DOT. And later in the meeting, we'll have an appearance from the Fairfax County Fire Department. Thank you, Patrick, for setting that up. This portion of the meeting is being recorded, and that will cover the presentation by our guest, Dan Stevens, the Q&A that follows, as well as the presentation by the battalion chief in the fire department. And after that, we will turn off the recording and conclude the rest of the committee business. So without further ado, I want to welcome Dan Stevens from FCDOT. He is here to discuss the county's contract for work on the transportation pilot project for the McLean Community Business Center. Dan is a transportation planner, level 3, if I have that correctly. He's been at FCDOT for 17 years. And his primary responsibilities involve project management, which includes coordination with other departments and agencies, and overseeing the work of consultants on various projects. And mainly he focuses on active transportation projects, although he also has done quite a bit of work on intersection and road widening improvements as well. As background, Dan grew up in the Raleigh-Durham area of North Carolina, went to school at both UNC Chapel Hill as well as NC State. Dan, do I have it correct that with that, you mentioned that you're a Duke fan, or did I misread your email?
I mean, if you grew up in Durham, you kind of have to be a Duke fan, but I...
And not a UNC fan.
I am. I'm kind of multiple loyalties, I guess. My brother went to Georgia Tech. My dad went to Duke. So it's, we covered all our bases, I guess, ACC.
But I mean, if Duke was facing UNC in the NCAA final, who are you rooting for?
I wish that game had never happened. Nobody wins.
All right, you're good. Story. Well, I'm not going to put you on the spot with any more background questions like that. But welcome, Dan. We look forward to your presentation. Do you have a PowerPoint that you want to share? Or
I do.
Okay. And I think you can share without my taking any action, but let me know if you aren't
okay.
See a share screen button.
Excellent. Yeah. Thanks, Glenn. I see the share screen button. I'm going to press that. And then I have a presentation. Share that. Then, so I assume everyone can see my presentation, and then.
Yeah, I think we can. You probably okay. Want to start the slideshow, and I think that'll eliminate the menu bars on the top and left.
Okay, very good. Well, thank you, Glenn, for the introduction. I'm Dan Stevens. You might remember me, some might remember me. I was the project manager for the phase 2 of the neighborhood study. That was a while ago. I currently work in the capital project section at FCDOT. The capital project section, we work on a variety of different kinds of projects, as Glenn was mentioning. And these vary from dealing with crosswalks and sidewalks. And we also have a lot of roadway and other kind of intersection improvement projects that we work on. And then some of the specific tasks, we look at things like traffic operations, and then get more into design related things when we do pavement markings and signage and roadway geometrics and all of these tasks here that I mentioned. They're all part of the pilot project that I will be talking about tonight. So just a little bit of background. I'm sure that everyone's very familiar with the plan amendment work that happened in McLean. This pilot project has its origins in the 2018 Area 2 M1 plan amendment. As you are probably all aware, it was all that plan amendment was all about turning the McLean CBC into, among other things, a more walkable environment that is more multimodal in nature. The plan amendment has goals that include encouraging revitalization and creating a sense of place and changing the land use, its density and mix of uses in the CBC, and making changes to both the urban design as well as the transportation facilities in the CBC. drilling down further into like the more of the transportation components of the plan, it was also about creating a high quality pedestrian experience and having buildings be closer to the sidewalks and having active ground floor retail uses and more multimodal streets. And so in this slide, I have an example of what is meant by a possible high quality pedestrian experience in addition to sidewalks and bicycle facilities. This comes from the comprehensive plan. We also have possible roadway geometric changes on this figure. You can see that it's probably hard to read, but it's basically having travel lanes that are about 10.5 feet wide or any 10.5 to 11 feet wide, as well as having a median island turn lane. And so all of this is an attempt to help pedestrians basically cross the street, among other things.
Dan, sorry to interrupt.
Yes.
I still see the first slide. I want to make sure that's not the case for others. Do others?
No, it is. I was just about to say the same thing. The slide has not advanced.
Can you try to stop sharing, Dan, and start again?
Yeah, I'm sorry.
No, yeah, we're stuck on the first slide and sort of the PowerPoint view versus presentation view.
I think if you just click on slideshow and then begin show, then that will allow the PowerPoint to begin and fill up the entire screen. You see that slideshow up at the top on the menu on the top?
Okay.
Click slideshow.
Slideshow, you are sharing, screen sharing. Should I just stop the share?
Should be a menu on the top of your computer, file, home, insert, draw, design, transitions, animations, and slideshow, part of the PowerPoint menu.
Okay.
Looks like you got it.
How is it when I have turn off my main monitor? I'm sorry.
Yeah, we see the view, like the view where you can see the notes in the next slide.
Oh, okay. Okay, I'm sorry.
If you go to display settings, there might be an option to switch screens. That might take care of it.
We seem to be, everybody's looking at slide 5 right now. I don't know where you want to be.
How about I just stop? Can I just stop the share? Because I'm like, I'll try again. I apologize.
No worries.
So I have share screen.
And then while we're waiting, somebody just joined by the name of Todd Barb. Can you please identify yourself?
Hi, this is Battalion Chief Todd Barb with the Fairfax County Fire and Rescue Department.
Great. Thanks, Todd, for identifying yourself. I appreciate it. We're just getting the PowerPoint going for the first presentation from FCDOT.
Not a problem.
So I'm trying to do you see anything now or?
Yes, we see the land use and transportation.
Do you see like the narration on the right or?
We do not. It originally was at the bottom, but it's not there anymore.
Okay. So I guess I've got it right. I apologize. Nope, just start at the beginning again or just?
Maybe just go over the slides real quick to get up to where you were so people can see.
So is that good?
Yep.
Okay, very good. So, just a quick introduction, and I'm in the capital project section, and we do various kinds of things, road design, traffic operations, and roadway design, and all this will be part of the pilot project. I'm sure you're all familiar with the project background. It has its roots in the 2018 plan amendment. Work started in 2018. Basically, the plan amendment had goals for encouraging revitalization and creating a sense of place, land use density and mix of uses, urban design, and of course, changes to the transportation system. It's all about, for the most part, high quality pedestrian experience, having buildings be close to the sidewalks and active ground floor retail uses, as well as having more multimodal streets. Here's an example of kind of what's meant by a high quality pedestrian experience. You have more narrow lanes, and it's basically easier for pedestrians to cross the street. And so out of that plan amendment came the pilot project, and it was kind of a follow-on motion that was approved by the Board of Supervisors in 2021, I believe. And so it was a follow-on motion as directed by the board that the pilot project would evaluate transportation options that would support the placemaking efforts in the McLean CBC. Staff were directed as part of the pilot project to look into different design options that, among other things, result in slower vehicle speeds. The pilot project could include techniques like having narrow vehicular lanes, as well as the addition of on-street time of day parking. And I'll talk about all of these possible pilot project options later in the presentation. Now, the study area for the pilot project, it's centered around the intersection of Old Dominion Drive and Chambridge Road. You see these areas highlighted in red. And so the study area is mainly focused on two main corridors. The first one being Old Dominion Drive, going from Beverly Road to Corner Lane. And then you have Chambridge Road, going from Old Chambridge Road down to the intersection of Ingleside and Tennyson Drive. And then the study area is shown previously runs along the two corridors, Old Dominion, Chambridge Road. And at the heart of the pilot project is to look at five potential interventions that could be applied along those two corridors. And those interventions, they include like providing on-street off-peak parking, reducing turning radii at intersections and reducing travel lane widths to 10 and a half feet or 11 feet wide to reduce the pedestrian crossing distances. Another big thing would be you have a lot of two-way left turn lanes, and one potential intervention could be to construct raised or landscape medians in place of the two-way center left turn lanes. The fourth option would be to remove dedicated right turn lanes, like at the intersection of Old Dominion at Beverly Road and Corner Lane at Old Dominion. And then the fifth thing that we could be looking at potentially would be to reduce the posted speed limit on Old Dominion Drive going from Beverly Road to Corner Lane. And it's currently at 30 miles per hour. And the option would be to have that lowered down to 25 miles per hour. So based off these five interventions, the cross section on Old Dominion could look like this. I showed this earlier. And basically you would have 10 and a half foot travel lanes and 12-foot median turn lane, and same thing for Chambridge Road. As part of the project, we'll further develop those five potential interventions into two more detailed corridor-wide concepts, and both of these will need to be, of course, evaluated. And the pilot project, if I had to kind of characterize it, it has two main focus areas, and one is more planning-oriented, and the other more engineering oriented. And so the two comprehensive concepts from a planning point of view will be evaluated based off of traffic, bicycle, ped, and transit measures of effectiveness. And then from a more civil engineering point of view, the two concepts will be evaluated based off of impacts due to the removal of right turn lanes. We'll be conducting speed studies. That's very kind of engineering in nature. And of course, looking at stormwater and potential stormwater and utility impacts, and also construction cost estimates. And that's a big part. And these conceptual drawings will be like what we would call like 10% conceptual design plans. And these will be evaluated based off of basically geometric and striping guidelines. It would be kind of a traffic engineer focus to that. They're very interested in like having proper striping for the turn lanes and whatnot. And then the other aspect, more of an engineering kind of aspect, would be valuation based off of stormwater utilities and of course, cost estimates. So now the traffic operation sides of things will be of particular interest with the evaluation of the two corridor concepts. Project will be conducting traffic operations analyses. And I have the first one here. This is, there'll be like six intersections that will be doing traffic operations analysis. The first one here is Old Dominion Drive at Beverly Road. Old Dominion Chainbridge Road. It's a major intersection, of course. Old Chainbridge Road and Chainbridge Road up to the, it's up at the northern end of the study, the pilot study. We have like Chainbridge Road at Brawner Street, and then of course Chainbridge Road at Laughlin, and then the sixth and final one would be at Chainbridge at Tennyson Drive and Ingleside. And it's very important to point out, and I have an animation for this, that the traffic operations at these intersections will not only look at vehicles, but also pedestrians. So signal timing is important, not just for vehicles, but also for pedestrians. And we're going to be looking at that as part of our evaluation. So that's important. And then in addition to looking at the intersections, we're also interested in looking at the areas in between and at the intersections for cyclists. And so for this, we will evaluate the two corridor concepts based on bicycle levels of traffic stress. It's an MOE that was done for the McLean CVC transportation study. And, in a nutshell, basically this is primarily based off of how easy would it be for a cyclist to travel along the two corridors. So signal timing at the intersections plays a role, mid-block crossings and whatnot. So that's a big part of the analysis of the concepts that we'll be developing. And then in addition to looking at traffic operations, we'll also be evaluating, as I said earlier, concepts based on engineering. And this evaluation will look at roadway geometrics and stormwater utilities. And of course, as I mentioned previously, construction costs. So basically it's pretty quick. I don't know if anyone, I guess we can talk questions if you need to get in touch with me. And my contact information here. So I guess, Glenn, if we wanted to talk about, if anyone has any questions, of course, but I'll send the slideshow.
Yeah, well, I see Sharon Gamble's hand is up. So Sharon, do you want to start off with the question?
Yeah, thank you very much. That was very helpful. I had two questions. Who is doing the study? Is it the county or is it a consultant? And what is the time frame for the study? When does it start and when is it expected to end?
So we have a consultant. It's Kittleson. They'll be doing the work. And they had worked on the McLean CVC study for Bob Pecora. And so we'll have them be doing the work. And then the plan as far as the schedule, play it safe, let's say it's going to start October next month. And then we would probably be done by early spring 2025. It's well over a year and a half.
And Sharon, I would note that in the document that David Wehrman had sent around in August, there is actually a timeline, although it's very general, and eventually leading to a Board of Supervisors approval projected to occur in winter 2024, should they in fact approve. A couple more hands are up, and let's start with Betty Yu.
Hi, Dan. Is there any way to create more pedestrian refuge type things in that intersection, the main one between Old Dominion Drive and Chainbridge Road, without affecting the ability to have the left turn lanes that are currently there or the same function?
So if I understand you correctly, be able to have a pedestrian refuge and still, of course, have exclusive left turn lanes, is that kind of what you're asking? I mean, would we be able to do?
Yes, some sort of, but still manage to make it more pedestrian friendly in terms of not having it. The long distance for the crossings without a refuge.
Yes, we'll definitely be looking at a pedestrian refuge option to help with make it an easier distance for pedestrians, and then tighter turning radii. Possibly, we'll be evaluating that at the intersection as well. It's all about trying to get that shorter distance, of course, and we'll be looking at signal timings as well. It's a big deal.
Thank you.
Oh, sure.
Cheryl, do you have a question?
Yeah, thank you, Glenn, and thank you, Dan. I have two questions. The first is, I'm seeing this building right up to the next to the sidewalks in multiple areas of the county and in Falls Church City. And how does putting the sidewalk next to a building and not having any separation, any type of grass or gravel, whatever, between the sidewalk and the building enhance the pedestrian experience? I see lots of problems with the county and other government entities allowing these buildings to be put right on the sidewalk. That's the first question. The second question is, what is VDOT's role in all of these discussions, especially when it comes to the removal of right-hand turn lanes? Because I don't see VDOT as being on board yet with enhancing pedestrian safety. They still seem most concerned with how many vehicles can get through a traffic light at any particular iteration in the morning and evening rush hours. So if you could respond to those two questions, I'd really appreciate it. Thank you.
Sure. It's an excellent question. So, and of course, Michael and I, we've talked about this. And so the big thing about this pilot project is that we're almost the entire focus is on the roadway from curb to curb. And so the pedestrian experience on the other side of the curb, beyond the curb, we're really not putting a lot of focus on that. Now, the thing is, it's that when you have, my understanding is that it's that street level retail, I guess it's how that kind of relates to our evaluation is going to be like the on-street parking. And so that's a big deal. And so it's to be able to have that short distance from the road to the frontage there. And so I guess that's kind of the interplay. And that now, but almost all of our focus is entirely curb to curb. And so it's, I guess it's, if I had to really characterize it, I'd say that ground level retail, it has a huge impact on the turnover rate, for example, and the on-street parking. And so that's one of the big interventions that we'll be looking at. So I guess that's kind of how that relates to our work, what we're going to do. Now, like with VDOT, they're going to play a major role in this, and we have a lot of interaction with them. That will be one of the biggest stakeholders as part of this study. They're going to have to weigh in on having lower speed limit on Old Dominion. And so we have to kind of go on by their guidance and how they do their analyses for that in order to justify it. If it is justifiable, of course, this is all an evaluation. And of course, narrowing the traffic lanes, they're going to be very interested in that for sure. And taking away of exclusive right turn lanes that you had mentioned. And so it's all part of a discussion. And so it's kind of the work that we're going to do. This is more engineering. Okay. And so it's the planning. They kind of have big picture items. They do look at traffic operations and whatnot, but they are aware of the constraints as given by VDOT and whatnot. But the CBC, it's kind of going into more engineering territory. So we have to deal a lot more with nitty gritty details associated with VDOT. So they'll definitely be part of the team. I know that there are criticisms about VDOT's policies, and then that kind of plays into our evaluation. And so these are the facts. This is the design. This is kind of, I don't want to characterize the planning effort as not being based on reality, but now you're kind of getting more into where the rubber hits the road, no pun intended. But, and so that, if that's a constraint that VDOT says, then that's going to be part of our analysis, and that'll be reflected moving forward.
Yep. Yeah. And I'll just add kind of what Dan kind of talked about, focusing kind of on the roadway is we're looking at, the study is looking at what we can do without getting into major reconstruction behind the curbs that's planned to happen with development when properties are redeveloped and you have those buildings and they're doing the streetscape frontage. But we're supposed to look at what we can do kind of between the curbs for the most part, sooner versus later, and what can be done by the county to help make it a more implement some of the ideas and strategies as part of the comp plan amendment. So that's kind of what Dan's talking about there. It, you know, I think a lot of the focus is you have the buildings closer to the road, it's a more urban environment, it's wider. So the idea is you don't have a 5 or 6 foot sidewalk that's right up against the building, but you have a kind of zone in front of the building, you have a zone, a walking zone, but then you're getting people further away from the road with the landscaping and buffer panels between the roadway and people. I get what you're saying. It looks kind of crowded with the buildings closer to the road like that. VDOT will have to approve any eventual improvements that get made in the right-of-way and on the roadways. So we will have to meet their traffic criteria, but we will be working with them. That's why this study is doing a traffic analysis. So we will hopefully be able to satisfy VDOT to be able to implement some of these things. We've been successful putting medians in. We've been successful, especially for two-way left turn lanes in the middle. We've been successful in narrowing lanes. VDOT doesn't have a problem with 11-foot lanes. We're going to look at 10.5 as well. So, you know, a lot of these things we should be able to do. Maybe not everything would meet the criteria necessarily, but hopefully most, if not all, do. Hopefully that provides a little more context.
Good. Thank you, Michael. Wade Smith?
Yeah, just to offer a couple of observations about the buildings being up on the sidewalk. Part of having pedestrians walk, you want to have an interesting walk. So part of being pedestrian friendly is making it fun to walk along the sidewalk. Right now, most of the sidewalks in downtown McLean are along a busy street, right up against a busy street. And on the other side is a vast parking lot. So it's not a very interesting pedestrian environment. If you have retail on the first floor and it's up against the street, it's like, you know, you go downtown DC, you walk along, you look in the windows, you have shop windows. It's interesting. So that's one of the reasons you bring the buildings up to the sidewalk. And as pointed out, the sidewalks will be wide. They're not going to be little 5 or 6 foot wide sidewalks. But half the job of getting people to walk around and want to do it is to have an interesting walk. So that's what you have if the buildings are up on the street and you look in the windows and do that kind of thing. So I just offer that.
All right. Thank you, Wade. David Werman, our
vice chair. Yeah, sure. Just a couple of things. Sharon sent me a message saying, I'm assuming that we're going to get these slides. Will we have this presentation sent to us to look at later? Because it affects how detailed our notes can be. We can't always keep up with the slides. I want to add, Glenn, that I couldn't respond to Sharon because I got a message saying that I'm in the chat room as a guest, and so I can't respond to anybody. So I don't know why that is, and it's not a big deal as long as I can still just, you know, unmute myself.
I don't have an explanation for that.
Yeah, don't worry about it. So anyway,
everyone should settle that. Chat.
I'm not worried about it. I don't do a lot of chat stuff anyway, but I just wanted to get that settled. Thanks.
Dan, a question I have, and this is probably reflecting a little bit of naivete on my part, I apologize, but the 5 paths that are identified in the Kittleson report, number one is providing on-street off-peak parking at the Old Dominion and Chainbridge Roads. Can you explain a little bit about what that goal is intending to accomplish and why it's important?
So I guess it's I guess that's like one of the 5 big interventions for our development of a that we've been given for the pilot project. And the basic strategy of having on-street parking is that it would only be done, of course, during midday or off-peak. And so I was reading the scope, and it says it could possibly be like on a Saturday. And I guess it's you know, we'll be looking at, there are all kinds of issues with that, of course. There's some pretty practical issues like enforcement and, you know, the geometrics of having on-street parking. Of course, it's fire and rescue is an issue. I believe that was looked at for as part of the planning element of the study of the comp plan amendment. And then it just, when you have that on-street parking and you're having people coming and going, and so it's going to clearly you're going to, and then you, if you have like a median that's a landscape median, and so you just have like one travel lane, what's going to be the impact on traffic operations? So it's basically one lane in each direction, but then you're going to have vehicles kind of coming in and out of spaces, and so that's something we're very interested in looking at. It's very much a traffic operations concern. And then, you know, that'll be one of the more interesting elements of our evaluation. And I say that because it's questions of like, well, where can we put parking spaces on roads, on Old Dominion Chain Bridge? You know, like one big issue would be as vehicles are making a left turn at Chain Bridge and Old Dominion, what's the receiving lane situation going to be like? And so, because if you go down to one lane, then you have like merging issues, and then that can impact traffic operations and whatnot. So it's probably going to be one of the more complicated operations aspects of our analysis. And some, because there's so many kind of moving parts.
and I'll add real quick, part of the idea is when you put a median in, you've narrowed the travel lane, you've got parking alongside the street. This all has the effect to slow traffic down, creates more of a buffer for pedestrians or bicyclists off-road on the other side of the parked cars. So this, again, it creates by narrowing the lanes, creating kind of the median, creating these obstacles along the way, you know, in the cars, like parked cars on one side, it does have the effect of slowing traffic down, which is one of the goals we're trying to accomplish to help make it a more pedestrian-friendly environment. So that's another goal of it, along with providing parking for the businesses in the downtown area.
So the idea would be to eliminate on-street parking during rush hour in the morning and the afternoon in order to allow an adequate flow of traffic during those periods, but otherwise to allow on-street parking as an effort to sort of narrow the roadway to one lane and then reduce traffic speed as a result of that. Is that a fair approximation?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right, thank you. Diana has her hand up.
Thank you, Dan, for the presentation. Half the job of the project should also include making sure residents can reach the center with ease without taking a car, because I'm sure parking will end up being an issue. This has been a concern for many since the initial studies for the center was done. I did come to some of the meetings back, you know, many years ago when this started. I've walked and biked from Chesterbrook Gardens near Kirby Road and Birch Road to where this McLean Community Business Center will be. It's not an easy bike or walk from this area. Sidewalks are missing or a slim sidewalk, and the biking route is difficult. I'm wondering if, you know, VDOT, FCDOT, what year down the road they're going to consider spending more money trying to make these routes to the center easier and review them so that they have high quality, so that people living away from there can have a high quality pedestrian experience. And I'm also wondering, since Corner Lane was part of my biking route, which wasn't easy and lots of vehicles take that shortcut there, will that be developed as part of the project at some point? So thank you.
Okay, that's an excellent question. Thank you for asking, because it kind of gets at the heart of basically what's the intent of the pilot project. And so we are like entirely focused on just looking at it's kind of very much kind of a engineering design focus to it, and it's an evaluation. And so we have these design features, and then what's the reality of being able to implement those? Traffic operations, engineering, all the constraints. That's almost like an inventory, and that would help inform future decisions. And so the moving into the future, when it comes time to make plans, this is theoretical. I can't guarantee that this would happen, but the strategy is this pilot project would be referred to when there's the time and the resources and whatnot to move forward with implementation. So I've heard things where, you know, this happens in other cases, improvements happen like with developments, or I know like in capital project section, we have projects that have been prioritized for funding, capital projects and whatnot. So, but as far as this pilot project is concerned, it's an evaluation and an analysis of all the constraints and limitations and opportunities for improvements. But it's more of a source of information for future decisions as to when and how improvements can be made. Is that about right, Michael? I think we had.
Yeah. I was just going to add, you know, with the comprehensive plan amendment, you know, it sort of lays down how the area will get built out, which will happen, you know, largely through the development process as parcels are redeveloped, and properties are redeveloped and new buildings go in. The county also does do its own standalone capital projects. They don't involve significant work off the roadway on a property unless we're going in to build a county building or a fire station or a police station or something like that. And so I just want to make sure everyone understands that the pilot project is a pilot project study. So with the understanding that the comprehensive plan will be built out largely through development over time, what the board wanted us to do with the follow-on motion was to give us money to do a study to basically look at these main five interventions Dan talked about. And basically what we want to have when we're done with the study is a list of some recommendations with cost estimates that would be basically capital project recommendations that once we get funding, the county could move forward with to help create a better, more pedestrian-friendly environment on these two roadways. Specifically, this is, you know, where the limits were set by the follow-on motion. It's something the county can do, realizing that it's going to take a lot of time for the area to build out over time through development. So we'll be testing by our design and analysis, testing some options, and then hopefully we'll be testing some options in the ground with some capital projects once we're able to get some funding. I don't know when that would be. So for a specific project kind of off of the two corridors we're working on within our limits, you know, something like a shared use path or a sidewalk or, you know, other type of facilities would either have to be a standalone county project or happen through development. So, you know, we have lots of unfunded active transportation, bicycle, pedestrian projects that we're working on. And I talked about that a little bit when I came to you all last time. But if that's something important to you, you can certainly submit a request if you don't see it on the upcoming list of projects that we're going to be doing our public outreach on, which we're hoping to do in about a month. Certainly get that in there for like future consideration. But we're pretty, the limits of this study are pretty confined. And then I just want to make sure everyone's clear that the study will end with some recommendations for capital projects that we'll then have to go try to get funded before we can move into implementation.
Okay, thank you. I know Paul has his hand up, but before I get to him, I noticed in section or task 6.1 of the consultant's scope of work is identify key stakeholders, and the consultant says that FCDOT will work with Janesville Supervisor's Office to identify key stakeholders. It is anticipated that there are about 7 groups associated with McLean. And I'm wondering whether the MCA is one of those groups. If not, I would ask that we be added as a stakeholder.
Definitely, for sure.
Okay, thanks very much. Paul?
Thank you, Glenn, and thank you, Mr. Stevens and Mr. Guarino, for joining us tonight. One of the interventions is to eliminate dedicated right turn lanes. I'm struggling to understand where those dedicated right turn lanes might be. I can't recall any on Old Dominion between its intersection with Beverly and Corner. I can't recall any on Chain Bridge between Old Chain Bridge and Ingleside. So can you help me understand which would be under study for removal within these project confines?
Sure. So let's say you're on Old Dominion and you're going from Dolly Madison towards Chain Bridge. You have, there's like a hotel there on the southwest corner, and the exclusive right turn lane is right in front of the hotel. So if you were...
it's a stay bridge. Is the hotel the stay bridge?
Yes, ma'am. Yes.
Okay, so this is inclusive of the approaches, so could extend several hundred feet further in either direction.
Well, it could. I mean, I see like the length of that right turn lane. I could see that. I'm not sure about the dimensions. I apologize. Okay. I can look into that. But.
Okay, but it is the approaches, and not just strictly between the two intersections.
That's correct. Okay. Just those are the only two I'm aware of based off of areas I've looked at.
Okay.
But we're just looking at that, and here's the possibility. What are the impacts, like cost and stormwater and traffic operations? That's what we're going to do for those. It's an assessment.
Thank you.
Okay, very good. I'm not seeing any more hands up. Does anyone else have any more questions? Oh, there's Diane again, please.
Hi, Michael. I just want to get some clarification on a few things. Of course, I was asking about some of these roads being developed for, you know, pedestrian going forward. And it sounds like you were clarifying that this pilot project study is really just for these two roadway areas, and really nothing else is being looked at right now. And so if you could just tell me if that's the case. And then it seems like somewhere down the road, there's going to be a comprehensive plan for the development. And I guess it may include these side streets like Corner Lane. The other thing, you said something about getting in a request to do things in the plan in the next month or something. Is that for the unfunded? So could you clarify those questions for me?
Yeah, so we're going to be coming out with our list of projects as a result of our prioritization process and getting public input to then narrow that list down to kind of priority projects out of that group to then seek funding for. So if this particular area isn't on that list, I would certainly put in a request that be considered in the future for funding. I'd say if you don't see it, or you can email me or Dan, and Dan can forward to me just like a request of, if you can give us like, if you would like, are asking for a sidewalk or some bicycle facility from point A to point B, we can just get that in our list of requests so it could be considered in the future.
Great. So is that the 380 that you're down to now?
Yeah.
So you're saying that will be, is that given to the Board of Supervisors, or who is that given to?
Well, right now we've got the list. We've got the draft list, which is a little bit over 380. We're coordinating with the board offices on the list and letting them see the results of our prioritization process, getting input from them. And then we'll do public outreach, which we're hoping to do in about a month with a couple of public meetings and a online survey.
Can we see those 380 online somewhere, those 380 list?
Not yet, because we're still coordinating with board offices before we publish, but then we'll be working to get that out and would launch a public survey at the same time. And then again, have a couple meetings just to explain the process and just explain the survey.
And any idea where how they're going to go out to the public yet?
On an online survey, and we're going to have an interactive web map where you can click on projects and get some project information. We'll have some data tables we're going to put on our website as well.
Okay. Thank you.
Yep.
Okay, very good. Well, I'm not seeing any more hands up, and I want to thank you, Dan, and surprise guest Michael for joining us tonight, as well as the others from FCDOT. And Dan, if you don't mind, and Michael, we may follow up with some questions if they emerge after the meeting. We've had a chance to digest what you said there tonight. But for now, we thank you very much. You're welcome to stay, but feel free to leave the meeting if you have other things that you prefer to be doing. And I think I saw
thank
that.
Thank you. I'll hop off. Yes. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you, Michael.
Thanks, Glenn. Thanks, Dan. Thanks, great job. Thanks, everybody.
I think I saw that the Battalion Chief Brian Edmonston is on the Zoom meeting. Brian, are you there?
I'm here.
Ah, very good. Welcome, sir. Thank you so much for joining us tonight. Brian is here to talk about the issue that Raj had raised in an earlier meeting. Unfortunately, Raj, I don't believe, is on the meeting at the moment. But at any rate, the issue concerns the use, and I'm probably not using the right terminology, but the use of grooves in speed humps that would facilitate fire engines being able to cross over those speed humps when responding to emergencies and traveling at a higher rate of speed. Did I characterize the issue correctly? And if so, can you tell us what your and the fire department's thoughts are on that proposal?
Yeah, sure. So a little background for myself, and I'll kind of think I touch on a couple of these topics. As you guys have already heard, this is a complex.
I should mention, Brian, because you weren't here at the beginning of the meeting. I apologize, but the meeting is being recorded, so I just want you to know we will post it on the website. So anyway, just in the interest of transparency and full disclosure.
No, thank you. I got a haircut today, so hopefully it helps out for my picture here
looking,
on the recording.
Looking sharp. Looking sharp.
Thank you very much. going back real quick, we just heard a little bit about the complexity, just talking with FC. Actually, he's Dan's still on. I don't know if I know Dan. I may have bumped into him a bit here and there, but I work with folks or talk with folks over time with FCDOT, VDOT, Board of Supervisors, county exec level, and obviously within the fire department and also the police department, as mentioned. This is these are complex environments. There are a lot of great people and working on these complexities of meeting service needs, the challenge to traffic flow. We all want to get somewhere, but at the same time, protect pedestrians, protect bicycles. In my case, and I'll speak, I'm going to try to stay very specific to first response and fire and the fire department and that norm. So counterpart of mine, Todd Barb, was going to be on to kind of listen in. I wasn't going to have him say anything other than just like give him a quick introduction, or excuse me, give a quick introduction for him. He's our community risk manager. So it's another component of what the fire rescue department has in the services available or contacts available so we can meet the needs of the community. And then quickly diving back into the point about traffic calming devices, or what we know as speed bumps, speed humps, or what else might be offered out there. And we all know the challenges is Waze and Google and all the unique things that have been developed. People find other creative ways to get around that maybe they didn't before. So again, a little bit on me. I'm battalion chief. I've got 21 years now in the fire department, kind of de facto, kind of wear this hat amongst another gentleman, Ben Kaufman, who also works with our Office of Emergency Management, who is a VDOT liaison on some of the bigger projects like 66 and the hot lanes. But kind of coming back in, I started and have been working closely with communities, community boards, others with our vehicle preemption project, which deals with changing signals. And I want to stay focused to speed humps and bumps, but I will offer some time if folks have questions on what vehicle preemption is and kind of how we work again with our partners in FC, DOT, and VDOT. And if anyone wants to pause, throw a hand up if there's any nomenclature that I use. Sometimes we talk a lot like that in the fire service. So we're responding to 120,000 incidents annually. So we stay busy. We're really seeing that urban, or what we knew as suburban interface, now becoming an urban area, Tysons, the McLean areas you guys have just noted about or talked about this evening. And coming back in, kind of as de facto liaison for the communities and other things. I've been delving into this, whether it's on Route 1, McLean, Reston, wherever, just looking at how do we slow traffic down? How do we make it easier for the traffic flow to occur, but still protect pedestrians and bicycle stuff? So, and then maintaining our response times within and throughout the community. As mentioned, speed humps. Well, let me go back. Speed bumps. So there's a mix of traffic calming devices. The speed bumps we know will slow down traffic to about 5 miles an hour. Again, this is, I'm wearing these hats. I'm not a traffic engineer. So Dan or others from, and who might still be on from DOT can definitely jump in. A speed hump will slow traffic down to in the neighborhood of 20 miles an hour. Point of clarification, the fire department, you know, we're really careful about how we respond in neighborhoods, meeting posted speed limits. Obviously, we want to get to an environment or a house fire, a medical emergency in the quickest time possible. And we monitor and track that. We're always hoping to be in the 90th percentile based on National Fire Protection Agency standards. But there are always challenges out there. And as mentioned, communities bringing forth ideas of slowing traffic down or cross-through traffic or cross-cutting traffic. So opportunities for these traffic calming devices are definitely out there. We work with FCDOT VDOT as advisors. We don't dictate policy. We don't dictate to what a community might do, but we do offer, you know, ideas and support on how to best ease that, because in an emergency, you know, time is life, time is property. And those are our goals when we talk about life safety, incident stabilization, or property conservation. And our goal is always to get to you as soon, as fast as possible. But we understand the needs of a community or the desires of a community to slow down traffic that's cross-cutting. So any options, and they could range from ideas of taking, instead of a bump to a hump, right? To a hump with basically an 8-foot cut throughs in them. So the wheels of larger apparatus can get through. Or other barrier devices we will advise against, we'll advise kind of what the impacts would be to the fire and rescue service. And then maybe ideas, maybe space them out further. Instead of being so close together, we'll space them out a little bit just to help us out and to make sure that we can maintain certain response time standards. I think short and sweet, that's probably where it is. I mean, you guys heard a lot about this stuff. And again, we're always out here to support the community, meeting our mission, protecting the property or lives, property, and for our citizens and others that are visiting the Fairfax County. So typically what kind of happens is a workflow. I'll close with this, is that a community will bring up an idea. Typically it comes to FCDOT or VDOT, and then we're kind of looped in the background to kind of give our input and thoughts. And then the community makes the final decision about what they think is best for them and what their needs are. So I'll close out there. And then also quick thanks to Patrick for connecting us and for me being here and the opportunity to speak with you all tonight.
All right. Well, thank you, Brian. So let me see if I understand this correctly. There is a bigger concern with the speed bumps, which are higher and more severe than with the speed humps, which allow vehicles to traverse at approximately 20 miles an hour. So when a community comes in and asks for traffic calming from FCDOT or VDOT, and the fire department is consulted, does the department weigh in to express its views that speed humps would be preferred to speed bumps?
VDOT or FCDOT will always reach out to us. They are really very pretty specific about what is suggested or what is being offered. And then we do provide feedback back to that point of contact. Typically, it originates from the VDOT or SCDOT piece, and we provide our piece back to them, yes.
Yeah, but that's, thank you. That's talking about the process. I was actually asking about more of the substance. So when the speed bumps are proposed, I mean, does the fire department have a concern about the installation of speed bumps? And has it expressed a preference for speed humps rather than speed bumps?
I would say like it goes back to what the community is asking for. As you heard, our desire is to meet, you know, response times and to get to a place where a 911 call or an emergency incident has been dispatched. But we understand the balance and the impact, you know, what the community is asking for. So if you were to ask me here, like, you know, each case individualized, I got to take it case by case, but a speed hump is going to allow us to respond more quickly to an incident. But I don't know that's going to be the right, you know, on some side street, some neighborhood street, you know, that a speed bump's not the better thing. We will get there no matter what.
Okay. And have you had any conversations with the Arlington County Fire Department, where I understand speed bumps are designed with the 8-foot grooves you were talking about to gain an understanding whether that has helped the fire department in responding to emergencies more quickly?
I have not talked to them regarding speed bumps, humps, or with the grooves to verify which one it is they're using, or the any analytics they might have used to see whether response times or impact to response times.
Okay. Thank you. We have a couple of hands up. David Wehrman.
Thanks, Glenn. So I'm sorry, I hope I'm not asking you to repeat much, but I was surprised to hear you use the term speed bump, actually, because in the past, whenever I or anybody else has been throwing around that term, it seems to me the people in the business have always corrected and said, no, it's a speed hump, not a speed bump. So we actually have speed bumps in the county, not just speed humps.
Absolutely. I
mean, like where, for example, do we have one or have any?
Speed bumps?
Yeah. I thought most of what we had were speed humps.
It's like, you know, again, the bump, you know, I mean, they exist in any, and you know, parking lots, community parking lots, condominium developments. They can be placed in the middle of, you know, streets, you know, I would have to get dive down probably with FCDOT to look very specifically.
Well, will we be able to tell if we looked at one which we're looking at? I mean, a speed bump, if you go through it without noticing it, is going to like tear your car apart, I suppose. And a speed hump, I suppose, will just be a mildly unpleasant experience, right? So, but I don't know how I would be able to tell one from the other. And more to the point, do you put the grooves in only one or the other of these things? Do you put them in the humps and the bumps, or?
And I think you could put them into both. I don't know specific dimensions, but you'll know a speed bump right away. It's the solid. It's taller. It's not as wide this way.
Okay. Right?
A speed bump is going to force you to slow down. Where a hump, you can kind of like glide over.
Okay.
I don't know, Dan. Not to pick on him, but if he had any comment or something, but he could probably.
I kind of understand that. So,
I mean, there are, if you ever go over to Bellevue, which is a little bit far away from where you live in Falls Church, David, Bellevue has put in speed bumps, and they really require that you slow down quite a bit to avoid damage to your car.
Right.
Like Brian said, a speed hump is more gradual, it's not as high, and it's kind of broader, so it's not a sort of a narrow. You'd know right away looking at a speed bump that you would say, wow, if I drove my car over that at a fast rate of speed, it would do a number in my suspension.
That's kind of what I figured. So yeah. So what I'm not clear on is your department is not categorically do you favor the idea of putting grooves in, since the idea here apparently is to make it easier for your equipment to get over these things, and in the absence of them, it really slows you down. So wouldn't you in almost any circumstance favor putting those into a speed hump or bump?
I think, like, you know, I'm sorry to like sound political, I guess, and a negative slight, but like, you know, we would want to take everything case by case and evaluation, working with our partners in the traffic department. Like, right, you're asking us to wear an engineering hat or understanding a flow of traffic. I'm just going to be frank to the point that like any kind of traffic calming device you put in is going to slow us down. Any grooves or cutouts that you put in is going to maybe defeat the purpose of what you wanted to do with that traffic calming device. So we have to look at it case by case and identify what is the main goal. We cross speed bumps every day that have no groove. We cross speed humps every day. I think the best part for a community is to be really aware of when they're asking for certain things that, like, you know, it does have impact to other services. And that's what the decision comes back to the community group of what they want, or that neighborhood HOA or whatever is going to have to make that decision in the end, what risks they're willing to accept.
Okay, thanks.
Diana?
Thank you, Brian. Thank you for talking to us about bumps and humps. This is very interesting because over here in near Chesterbrook Gardens on Birch Road, we actually all of a sudden had a hump go to a bump. I guess now that's what I've learned. A hump went to a bump. I guess the bumps are taller in height, and I'm wondering if you'll speak to that. Like, it seems like they're taller too. And I've seen many of those, I believe, now put in the Pimmett Hills area, on Pimmett Drive in particular. Well, there was one over here on Birch Road, and I know a lot of residents were very surprised about it. And I know the fire department uses Birch Road a lot to connect from Old Dominion to Kirby Road. And it was like, I think it was like the only speed, for many years, it was a speed hump, and then it turned into a speed bump. And then I think because residents spoke a lot with the county, they turned it back into a hump because bicyclists were like, this is just way too hard on us. So my question is, there is quite a height difference on those as well. Is that correct? And does the fire department, when you had to go over that as a hump, was it maybe perhaps you also helped the residents by saying we don't really need that hump there, just take it back to being a bump?
Or take it back to being a hump.
We're gonna offer and contend that any traffic calming device is gonna create an impact to response times and slow down from the posted speed limit, right? So if it's, speaking abstractly a little bit, 25 miles an hour in a neighborhood, a speed hump is going to slow down. They have understanding, researching, the hump can slow you down to about 20 miles an hour, right? The calming piece, where a speed bump is going to require you to come down to 5 miles an hour. So the slower we get, or the slower we have to go, that the more impact it would be to the response time. But in essence, that's what you're asking for the traffic calming device to do, is slow down traffic in those areas. The height, I'm not sure, is really what the issue is. I think it's basically the distance that you travel over that height. But again, I'd have to research again the specifics, the dimensions. So if it's a more gradual versus a quick up and down, you know, that's the bump up and down real quick, where you got to slow down, versus the hump where you're kind of gliding across.
Well, the humps seem to be much taller. And like I said, Pimmett Drive still has them right now. The one on Birch Road was changed so that it was not as tall and as difficult, you know, and really slowed you down. So I was wondering, does the fire department ever go to the county and say that's a problem there? You guys do that sometimes?
I'm sure we could in a case it'd run up through we call a chain of command or COC to come back and to talk to the right people. But again, the community would have the ultimate say in that. We're going to respond no matter what. We're going to make do with what we can, and we're going to get to the address that requested 911 services.
But you don't know if they're necessarily taller also, you're saying, right? These.
I would need to do a quick research to see what the specific dimensions are. I would kick to Dan if he's willing to talk about them at all, if he has expertise on them, but I don't have that dimensions and to tell you exactly what they are.
Okay, thank you.
Let's see, Merrilee had your hand raised, but you lowered
it. No, that's okay. I just wanted to give a quick example that David was looking for. for speed bumps are all of those cut-throughs between Beverly and Dolly Madison, or Beverly and Old Chainbridge Road. Those, if you hit those, your car smacks. And they're not necessarily higher, but as Brian was saying, it's the gradual approach and decrease in the height of the pavement that gives you a gentler ride over a bump. Whereas the speed bumps they're just literally six inches wide and maybe the same amount high. But when you hit one of those, you smack it hard. And that's the difference.
That's Merrily's theory on smacking those bumps hard.
It'll shake everything in your car, and never mind what it might do to all the equipment on a fire engine.
Yes, you're absolutely right. Carrie?
Thanks, Glenn. I guess this is more of just maybe a clarification that maybe will help the conversation a little bit. I live in Pimmit Hills, and I've been involved with the traffic calming efforts, which have been included several phases of the installation of speed humps in Pimmit Hills. And so my understanding is all of the traffic calming devices in Pimmit Hills are speed humps, not bumps. As well, my understanding, having gone through the process, my understanding is speed bumps in residential neighborhoods, at least ones, controlled by VDOT and Fairfax County, speed bumps are basically just not an option. And maybe that's not strictly true, but they, heavily frowned upon at the very least, because they slow you down so much slower than the speed limit. What was, I guess, interesting when I thought about it was, we were never given an option of this of the speed humps with the cuts in them, which some research suggests are called speed lumps, just to make the nomenclature more confusing. So, that was my experience. That having gone through the traffic calming process, I think I'm on my fourth or fifth go round now. Every time it's been, here are the proposed speed humps, and there was never like a suggestion of like, or we could do speed lumps or vice versa. So I, why that is, I don't know, but that is what my experience has been in Pimmit Hills. So just wanted to add that, just to hopefully add some clarification for everybody's help.
Yeah. Thank you, Carrie. So Brian, just, to make sure I understand, and I hope you don't feel like I'm trying to pin you down or something, but based on your comments tonight, it's my understanding that the fire department does not categorically favor speed humps over speed bumps, and does not categorically favor either speed humps or speed bumps that contain the 8-foot grooves that allow fire engines to traverse them more easily, but deal with these requests for traffic calming on a case-by-case basis as they arise. Is that a fair summary?
I would say that we favor anything that's going to allow us to get to that resident that to call 911 as quickly and efficiently as possible. Okay. I think as a community group, it's important to be an informed consumer when you're asking for traffic calming devices to understand impacts to 911 responses, police, fire, the like, by that. So if VDOT, FCD asked me about, they want a neighbor wants to put speed bumps in, we are going to advise them not to put speed bumps in. If they ask me to put speed humps, I'm going to advise them not to put speed humps, or to understand the impact that speed humps will have on each one of these is going to have an impact to our overall response time. If they ask about putting the speed humps with grooves or bumps with grooves, same thing. Just be aware this is going to have impacts to response times and potential consequences that we are unforeseen until they're there. So just, that's where a community needs to make the best, most informed decision they can. We are not in favor of traffic calming devices, but we understand the need for these in certain areas to slow down traffic, to protect residents, to, make pedestrian flow, bicycle flow easier and safer.
Okay, thank you. Patrick, you're on and you're our public safety liaison for the MCA. And thank you very much for taking the time to join our meeting tonight and for helping to arrange for Brian's presentation. Appreciate it. Patrick, did you have any questions or thoughts that you wanted to share with the guests and the committee?
Oh, thank you, Glenn. First of all, I want to thank you for allowing the fire department to come in and discuss this issue. The issue kind of came to us in a way that maybe comes up through the system. The volunteer firemen that are working with the paid firemen in Fairfax County have taken this issue to us, the MCA, and then I did the research to figure out who to reach out to and who potentially an FCDOT would also be able to contribute to a discussion of putting cuts into speed bumps. I appreciate the discussion from BC Edmundston about the difference between speed humps and speed bumps and looking at it on a case-by-case basis from an HOA or a community and also the various risks. But what I'm not really clear on is in terms of cuts themselves, just as a general practice or as an ability to make the calls for service faster for the fire department in the already existing speed humps that are in place today, would the fire department be in favor of FCDOT or some other organization within the county or the state to go into these speed humps and arbitrarily put cuts into them? Maybe I'm looking at it too simply, and I'm not trying to sound negative, but I don't seem like I'm getting that answer. So I really don't know where the fire department stands on this. And maybe the gentleman from FCDOT who's on the call, if he has any thoughts on how do we get to the next level of this in dealing with the speed bumps that are already there and decreasing the calls for service from the fire department. Are you aware of that? Are you concerned about that? Do you want to handle that? Do you want to do something about that? This would be for Dan Stevens if you have an answer.
Sure. I know I'm in the same division with another section that deals with traffic engineering and traffic calming. And maybe, Brian, you may know Neil Freshman. And so it's something to work with. And he would definitely have a better expertise and understanding about that than me. I don't mean to kick the can in here, but he might be better at kind of saying that. And I'm not up to date on all the efforts that his section does in terms of the latest traffic calming.
I'm sorry, Dan, would you mind repeating that name?
Oh, it's Neil Freshman.
How do you spell his last name?
It's F-R-E-S-C-H. M-A-N, I believe. Maybe just one N, I think.
Yeah, great. Okay, very good. Well, thank you, Patrick. I kind of have the same questions that you have, but I appreciate your raising them. But Brian, anything further you want to say to close us out on this? I don't see any more hands up. I very much appreciate your taking the time to talk to us tonight.
No, just to reaffirm that we are for anything that does not impede 911 responses to the incident. So I don't have data to say that, like, because a cut through, is provided in a speed hump or bump. And I think using traffic engineering and delving into this a little bit more and deeper, but that's where I think the solution lies. And I don't want to sell a bill of goods, like saying that just because you put a speed bump with cuts in it, that's somehow not going to impact response times. Cause I think it still will. It's still going to have response apparatus slow down, and but that's what it's designed to do. We're not going to be able to blow through, or maintain the route of 25 miles an hour when we see one of those. I mean, our vehicles are big; they're 45,000 to 65,000 pounds more. They carry hose, as mentioned. They hit something wrong, one of the dual axles twists or something like that. They're solid axles. We're getting really specific. So I just want to. These are complex. Kind of actually, I'll bring it full circle to what we talked about, all the things you guys were asking with the FCDOT presentation from Dan earlier. These are complex complex situations, complex challenges and questions that we want a full review of. And I think as Carrie and others were asking, was like, you want to deal it case by case, walk this out, understanding all the impacts when you're talking about putting in traffic calming devices, that there will be impacts, maybe unforeseen, that we just can't identify or understand until it's there. So that's kind of where it would be. I just want to make sure, like, the fire department is for responding to you as quickly as possible and maintaining our response time goals. But we understand the challenges of a community trying to protect kids, pedestrians, everything else. So hopefully that's very clear. Like I hope that as we end that part, but just these are complex things that we really need to evaluate and understand.
Okay, very good. Thank you, Brian. Appreciate it very much. Appreciate your time. Dan, thank you for staying a bit longer. I'm going to turn off the recording function now, and we're going to continue with the committee business, and you're welcome to stay or to leave.
Thank you all.
Very good.
Have a good night.
Thank you very much. Thanks.
Okay, bye. Thanks.